First Baptist Church of Redmond, January 19th, 2014, Passing Time.
Please rise, let's read this together in unison. Reading is Ecclesiastes 3:1. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose.
I've been talking to a couple of people this week as I looked at this very simple passage, because as I looked at it and read it and studied it, there's more than meets the eye. Now, there's a danger when you listen to preachers like me, because we can try to wring too much or twist things too much, or a thing that we have is there's an error that preachers make. It's called the word study fallacy. That means we're looking at a word in the Bible and we're trying to see all the things it could have an impact for. And sometimes we strain at a gnat and make it say all kinds of things, and it has no idea, and you had no idea, and all of a sudden you look at your Bible, can I trust? That's not what we're going to do today, but we're going to look at something a little differently as you look at these verses. Passing time, that's what we're looking at today, and yeah, I know the Bronco game starts in a few minutes, but I'm going to not quit my sermon at noon, okay? It won't be as I'll be timely, but I know the football game starts, but they don't need me.
Now, get over to 3:30, I'll definitely be done by then. Just thought I'd comfort you with that one. This is a baseball player. His name is Barry Zito. Are you familiar with him? Barry Zito's a pitcher. He used to pitch for the A's. He began to have struggles in his baseball career, and he didn't pitch so good. In 2010, a few years ago, he had his worst season professionally as a pitcher. So much so that his team he was with in 2010 didn't have him in their starting rotation as a starting pitcher. The next season, 2011, he got injured and didn't pitch very well. So people like that, pitchers like that, well, everybody says, well, you know, pitchers, they wash out, they're not doing that good, let's get rid of them. So in 2012, he's a free agent, and what's going on? Well, by the San Francisco Giants and added to their pitching staff. And in 2012, he suddenly won his last 14 starts. That's amazing. And pitched in their World Series victory. So Barry Zito, World Series victory pitcher. Wow, very good. And he gave a testimony. I've got a copy of a portion of it here. When the season was over, you know, if you're a star, you make a lot of money, you win, you have a rags to riches story, people want to talk to you. So he gave a great testimony about recommitting, quote, his life to Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. And he wrote, these are some of the things he said. Sometimes you have to go through difficulty and physical trials to really get broken down. He says, all right, something bigger is going on here. A message is being sent. I've got to listen. A few months later, I realized I'd been doing it alone. My best friend told me an old story about a shepherd leading his sheep. And then he went on and on to say how God blessed him and was with him and gave him praise and testimony. Another picture up here. This is a familiar picture. This is the football player, Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow has a great testimony, spiritual missionaries, University of Florida, football game, played for the Broncos for a while, played for the Patriots. He's not playing football right now. So, when we talk about God being with us and God helping us and God doing things, you know, Barry Zito gives a great testimony and wins the World Series. I don't know if there were Christians on the team they beat in 2012 with the Detroit Tigers. But if there was a Christian on the Detroit Tigers in 2012, his team did not win the World Series. Now, the team that did not win the World Series, Jimmy, doesn't have people asking for testimonies and telling stories of great drama and return. That doesn't mean they're less important. It just means they didn't win. When we look at Ecclesiastes chapter 3, we look at that first verse that Harold read for us. To everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. I want to mostly be looking at that verse
And then we're going to look down in the chapter, verses 10 and 11, and we're not going to look at the contrast very much, because what I want to do is influence the way perhaps you think about this passage, or you look at this passage, and tell us, as God tells us, how we should be using this passage. Why did Solomon write this? Because if you remember, I said that Solomon has three books of the Bible. He has Song of Solomon, excited young man, going to get married, talking about our tremendous things. The second section, he went on and wrote the book of Proverbs, but he's at the top of his name, wise man, wisest man that ever lived, God blessed him with power and riches and good looks, and he really became a wise man. And then as he went through life, he walked away from God for a while because, as so many of us do, he began to be controlled by his things and possibilities. In the previous passage, when we looked at the first two chapters, he said, I set my mind to trying everything, essentially good and bad. He tried it all. It was frustrating for him. So as the book is going to go through and progress through the chapters of Ecclesiastes, it's going to start off with him expressing discouragement, depression, and things getting worse. But as he goes, he's going to be more positive. He's going to talk about the things that work. He's going to talk about good lessons that he learned. And in the middle of the problems, in chapter 3, he begins with, I'm going to call this a pearl of wisdom, and he drops them for us in the middle of a lot of discussion about despair. So look at these verses. There's a time, there's a season, there's all these things. What in the world is he talking about? What is he trying to tell us? Why is he mentioning this? And I'm going to give you a shade of meaning to this passage that I think Solomon is telling us to adjust the way we think as we go through our daily frustrations. And why do we have these crazy things over here? Because these are things that happen regularly, probably at your house. Ladies, does anybody at your house wear clothes that need to be washed? Gentlemen, do you ever wear clothes that need to be washed? So if you do, sometimes you've got to do laundry. In our house, the six of us live there, and all of us have the habit of wearing clothes on a regular basis. And then the clothes we wear, we go about our day, and even then, when it's not, I'm sitting in the living room and finish the things we're talking about today, and I was relaxing, was watching some sports, and he said, hey, you've got stuff on your shoulder. Remember that? I said, oh, of course. Well, something else for the laundry basket. You know, and I expect one day to roll out of bed and get up and magically find the clothes I put in the laundry basket have emerged because I don't often participate in the reformation of our clothes. I do sometimes. Last night, Barbara went to bed and she said, will you please move things from one device to the next device in that magical chain of life with my laundry? So I did. Here and there, push the button, throw in the thing, clean the van, go on. Very simple for me. But I don't forget it's a regular thing for my wife. The next thing is something that I really got for Daniel, because Daniel wants to mow the grass. But I'm nervous about him using the push mower or even the riding mower. Yeah, you're right. Wow. So we see Daniel on the riding mower. You can, you know, when I was going to be a push mower, and a push mower, well, you know, you push it along, and you know, if you let go of the push mower, it's not going to go any place. It's not going to run. Rocks don't generally fly out too much in the push mower, and the grass just goes right back in the lawn, so it's even ecologically sound. But in the summer, you guys got to mow. Guys got to mow with some regularity. We're not mowing now. But in the summer, you got to mow. And if you don't like to mow, or my problems have allergies, grass allergies. If I mow the grass too much, I can't talk the next day. So if I do the grass, it's going to be Monday or Tuesday, or I can't talk very well on Sunday. So those are things that happen on a regular basis. And if you don't like it, if it's something that's just got to happen, you may not be too enthused. And you may decide to have your outlook shaded. And see, here I think is the whole point of the matter. If there's a lot of things you do regularly, that I do regularly, that maybe I don't like, that are not my favorite things, but I still have to do them. And when you get up in the morning, knowing those things are waiting for you, you have a choice to make. And forgive me, that's how I'm looking at this, is a choice. And Solomon is telling us this is the choice to make. His first two chapters communicated an enormous amount of frustration. There's nothing new under the sun. Vanity, vanity, emptiness, meaningless. So he gets up in the morning and looks at all the things he can do because he's king. He can do anything he wants to do. He can get some boats swinging down a river and try surfboarding. He can have people try to make planes and try to fly them so he can be safe. And he's not going to get it. He can do anything he wants to. He is not happy because those things are not making him feel good. They don't give him an edge to his life. He's not satisfied. He's always looking for more. He wants to do something else. So he can choose to get up in the morning and decide that all of this is a waste. It's discouraging. Just to touch on something and move on, in my close family area, years ago, someone in my family attempted suicide. They were not successful, but they attempted. And they were almost successful until somebody happened to notice them. Involved medical team, and so they went on there and didn't try it again. That person then adjusted and moved on. But in our society, it's very easy to feel overwhelmed, discouraged, depressed, and decide you don't want to do it anymore. If you're like me, I also know people who have been successful at that. They wanted to end their life, and they did, directly. Why do people think that way? Why do they do that way? Why do you and I get discouraged? There's a lot of things that can make us depressed, discouraged, make us think we're not happy. I don't get the things I want, something I'm going to look for, I'm never going to have. I'll never be able to do that again. I'll never go there. And you wake up in the morning and you think, life is rotten. Let's look at this first verse. Can I give you a slightly different way that you should be looking at it? And I try to live this way, and it kind of influences some of the strange, unusual, awkward things that I'll do and say as I go throughout my year. What this passage is saying, if I can spin it a little bit, if Solomon has said that things are difficult, he's depressed, and he's saying this, listen, there is an appointed time for it. There's a time for everything. Everything's going to happen. You wake up in the morning, things are going to happen. Then I want you to look a little farther. When it says, and a time for every event under heaven. I was talking with a couple of people here and say, here's what's really grabbed me. We look at here at the second time when time comes up that there's a time for every event. Most of the time when that is discussed in our Bible, when that word is used, it's not the word here for beautiful, but this is where we're ending up. Because the word here that's designed for a time for every event under heaven, most of the time when the Old Testament uses that terminology, it talks about doing something fun. Like fishing, it's used to describe the way a guy looks at his wife or his girlfriend. It's used to describe you doing things that you really look forward to, like maybe it's going to be your team that you're going to watch, wearing team-oriented clothing perhaps. Perhaps it's going to be involved with a vacation. It's going to be involved with who you spend your time with or eating something that's your favorite. Like, oh, I'm looking forward to the end of the day because, oh, my wife has made a cake. And when we get done with dinner, I'm going to go have this cake. I'm going to go have my favorite lunch. I'm going to go have, I'm looking forward to doing this. That's the term that Solomon stuck in the second case. So what he's saying is, listen, as you get up in the morning, there's a time, somewhere things are going to happen. But there's a time to do things that you should look forward to. You should be looking forward to your life as you go through all these experiences. A time of seeing new things, a time to die. And he goes through this list of 14 things, this. And he's saying, as you go through these things, don't dread them. Don't let them make you want to quit. Don't let them want to stop. Don't get so afraid that you don't want to get out of bed. Don't get so perturbed, discouraged, or angry that you just say, I don't want to do this anymore, and off yourself. Because if there's anybody that could have arranged the circumstances to have left this world at his own control, it was Solomon. Their history is filled with stories of kings, of famous leaders, who took their own lives because of depression, discouragement, or failure. So as he started this section, I believe he is saying, listen, as you get up, things are going to happen. Now, all the things that characterize people's lives could characterize your life. But listen, as you go about your business, realize that there's a time to deal with these things, and you should look forward to facing them. Chapter 3, verse 11. He has made everything, New King James Bible says, appropriate, but the word beautiful is the meaning. I think our regular King James Bible says beautiful. He has made all things beautiful in his time. We have a hymn that says that. And that's exactly what Solomon is saying when we're done. There's a lot of things that happen to me that I don't find beautiful when they strike. Oh no, what is happening? That's oftentimes when you say something to someone and they speak back harshly, quickly, ignore you. You've told them something that they don't think is very beautiful when it happens. Oh, that's familiar. The psalmist says, listen, if you will adjust your thinking to living in wisdom, wisdom is life from God's point of view, you will begin to agree with, I think this is a great perspective, old preacher Chuck Swindoll, I got a lot of his books, he had this quote in the book on Ecclesiastes, when God takes charge, beauty emerges. And I have to wrap my mind around that, because when things happen, they don't seem beautiful. I remember, I've only had to change a few tires in the vehicle I was driving, because I was first of all, I just haven't had any flat tires. But one time in the Bay Area on I-580 at the connection between the Bay Area and I-5, I had borrowed someone's van to take someone else to the airport. It wasn't even me, and their tire went flat. And I was pulled over in these little skinny side lanes on the freeway in San Francisco area, so cars are not going slow. And I've got this big van jacked up just barely enough so I can get the tire off the ground. I'm changing it, and I'm doing this, and I'm just scared for my life because I was the only one in the van. And you've seen here in the freeway where people sometimes don't pay attention and they hit that van or that car while someone's working on it. I was sure that was going to happen to me because the cars were going by so close, I could feel the wind of every vehicle driving by me. And I was changing the tire because we needed to get out of there, and I was terrified. That was not a beautiful moment. But the tire got on, and did you ever get out of there, Pastor? Well, why didn't I? I did not need it that day. And the tire got fixed, and I drove home and had this story to tell. So I struggle with this thought that God can make things okay. So I need to get an idea of how to think this way, because what Solomon is saying is he doesn't say everything is good. We talked about people who have deaths in the family just recently. He doesn't say those things are good. Those things are things that you're going to have to face. And what I need to remember is that I may not be around to see it or live long enough to see God's kind of fully displayed and fulfilled. Because here's what I see, as I found this picture, vegetarian ham. I can't imagine trying to eat that. I tried fat-free hot dogs once, I couldn't get it down. I left it. Vegetarian ham. When I see that, it makes me cringe. What I see is generally the wrong thing. Things are not going as I'm hoping for, anticipating. I see the process. God sees a valuable end product. I see today and the problems I have as I face things, but God sees in eternity. And if that doesn't mean that the problem I'm facing, the difficulty does not matter, and that I should quit, or that I should say it's not worth it, or that we can talk about it. Suicide is a thing that people think about. I'm saying this because, well, the Bible, I think, talks about a lot of different issues. And I told you, I know people who have tried it and failed, and I know people who have tried it and succeeded. And it comes down to this: how do you view yourself, and how depressed do you allow yourself to get? How discouraged do you allow yourself to get? How far will you reach to try to let everyone know that you're not happy? Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 10 tells us, and I like that quote, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. If you're doing something, you should do as good as you can possibly do. You should do your best. Talking about basketball, that's what they tell the kids sometime in practice. Don't get out there and go halfway. Don't get out there and say you're not. You need to try. You've got all these other people out there on the team with you. If you fail, your failure can influence all the rest of their efforts, and what you have done wrong will cause everybody else to not be successful. And in life, God tells us that each of us have a part to play in the lives of others. When we talk about spiritual giftedness, 1 Corinthians 12, 13, 14, spiritual gifts are primarily designed by God so that when a believer has one, he influences and helps, she influences and helps the people that they know, the Christians that they know. Your spiritual giftedness is important to me. Whatever I have is important to you because we build up, we help, we do things for each other, and we so fulfill the law of Christ by being the hand of assistance in somebody else's life. So whatever you're doing, you should do it as good as you possibly can. And work is hard. It doesn't mean that just because something is difficult or hard, that we should not work at it. I'm not going back to wearing my size 36 pants yet, although I work on things. Okay? I don't have to wear my fat pants. After all, your pants are fat pants. Well, it's a contrast. But, you know, I shoot my insulin, I have my vegetables, I eat my legumes, and go about my business. Here's the point. Without God, life is purposeless and profitless. And this is Solomon's perspective that he's working his way through his book to tell us. Without God, life is vain. Life is empty. Life is meaningless. Why don't you just act out on every impulse if it doesn't matter? With God, ultimately, things will make sense. It's just that sometimes we're uncertain when everything is going to work out. Will the Seahawks get to the Super Bowl? Will they get this time? Will they get a good set of officials? If they get a good set of officials, will they catch the ball? Will somebody else get injured? Will the moon strike? Will the power go off again and mess everything up like the year before? So here's the point. God seems to give us an interest in tomorrow, right? We're interested. We want to see things. We're working on things. The Bible tells us that he has set eternity in their heart. It's us. And so, we will not forget about the work which God has done from the beginning leading to the end. God makes us curious. God makes us hungry. God gives us the ability to see above the present. That's actually what that means. He said eternity in their heart. It's, you look forward to dreaming. You want to have that perfect garden. You want to make that perfect pair of pants. I've got a cartoon I'm going to use tonight, so sorry, I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. It's a picture of a young woman taking her grandma out to Chinese food. And the young woman is trying to teach grandma how to use chopsticks. I love this cartoon. I didn't mention this morning. So the young woman is saying, no, grandma, use the chopsticks. Use the chopsticks to lift the noodles up. And what grandma has done is, grandma is holding one chopstick in each hand, and she has this wonderfully woven thing. And she says, I'm sorry, honey, I knitted these noodles together into fabric. Wow, grandma, how about that? Well, grandma didn't know what to do, but she knew what to do something, so she did something. I never showed her what she did with the fabric she had. But for us, the issue is, by faith, what do you do? Abraham. God told him to be the father of many nations and told him to take his son, walk him down the road, build an altar, tie him up, and get ready to light the fire. Now, he didn't kill his son. God stopped him. And God provided them a sacrifice to use. God is not a human sacrifice. But Abraham did no better than to do what God told him. And God says, because you did the right thing in a very difficult time and didn't argue with me, wow, am I going to bless you. So I give that to you as the image. There's a lot of things that you have to face, deal with, do, and sometimes they're monotonous. Why am I doing it? That's the thought, you know, why should I clean the house? It's just going to get dirty again later. I'll just have organized piles and just rummage through the piles. Like I talked about teaching Juana on Wednesday night, talking to my kids, when you walk in your room, and clean room, all the clean clothes are by their bed, and the dirty clothes are all on the floor by the wall. Son, why is it that way? Well, Mom, when I get out of bed, where I reach out, if I can grab something, I know it's clean, I put it on. And the clothes I take it off, I throw it against the wall, and I know they're dirty. So you want dirty clothes? If I can't reach it, then I grab it and throw it in the basket and give it to you. But if I can reach it, it's there conveniently for me. But you don't do that, right? None of you have agreed with me. So, here's our point. There's a point to all this. For us, life can seem incredibly frustrating. Don't act like someone with no hope. Don't act like someone with no hope. A friend of mine, years ago, had a relative who went to prison for a period of time, and they were just crushed. When they got out of prison, the prison officials told their relatives that they needed to be careful because this person was so ashamed and so embarrassed that they had been put on suicide watch. So they made sure that person was never left alone. So things were going okay, but the family went out of the house, and this relative had come to visit my friend's family. And everybody ran down to the corner store for a minute, and my friend, who was a young woman, single in her early 20s, was alone in the house with the relative who went downstairs to get his clothes. And she thought for a minute he'd been downstairs about 10 minutes, and she went down and found him. Because that's all the time it took. Because he was depressed. Because he felt like he had no hope. Solomon tells us, you are never in that spot where there is no hope. God is with you. We just see today or this moment can be really frustrating. But for us, God has something better for us. Daniel in the Bible, arrested, taken in prison, gone to another country, learned another language, learned another task. He still had hope that God was watching him, noticed him so much so that he didn't want to offend God, even while he was in the military academy, learning what he should do. And so he ate his vegetables, he ate his legumes, like he should. I mentioned Abraham. Abraham, I'm going to bless you with a big family. By the way, the son that you waited for, this is not your first son, but the second son that you really like. I want you to take him over and prepare to offer him as a sacrifice. Abraham said, okay. But he also was listening very carefully for God to redirect him. Because he knew something didn't look right, but he was just doing his business. Choose to go through your day. Here's the whole point. Following God anyway. That's the point. Things happen. You don't know. You don't explain. You don't understand. Stuff doesn't happen. Stuff happens sometimes. It doesn't mean God doesn't love you. It means that for whatever reason, things have come up, and somehow you need to keep doing your business. Because one day, you can't see how it's going to happen. God will make, Ecclesiastes 3:11, God will make all things beautiful in their time. So keep doing your business. Do what you know to do. Do what you should. Do what you can. Do the things. It's not that it doesn't matter. It's just that it doesn't matter what we think. What we think doesn't matter. Because we're not in charge. God's in charge. And do what God says. Oh, by the way, forgive me. But this is appropriate. You see the cartoon? Guy's watching something. His wife says, tell me again, you love me and I'm so beautiful, while he's fighting against you.
It's 3rd and 7 from the 45.
The text underneath it says, there's a time for everything, and everything on earth has its special season. So Ecclesiastes 3 says, ladies, game time is not snow time. You need the Bible verse for that? We got one. So the point of this passage is very simple. The point of this passage is, do what you know is right to do anyway, no matter what everybody else is doing.
do the right thing.
God, help us. God, bless us. God, while we go through life, help us to do it with a smile in our heart, with a song in our soul, with a good look, with a humorous quip, and help us to deal with the things that we've all got to go through. Help them not stop us. Help us to not think that these things around us are because you hate us, but you have good for us. Help us to honor you. Bless us. Give us your wisdom. Give us your help. But help us have a good perspective on the life you give us. And while we go through all these things and the season we find them, help us to look forward to having some fun while we do them. In Jesus' name, everybody said,